It's July 9th, 2019, in Rudadesh, a seminar on how to give a class. So I hope all of you have something to write with and something to write on. At least a phone or something, but you also need something to write with and something to write on. You can just come in. We're not disturbed. Does everybody have something to write on, something to write with? At least a phone? Yes? Do we have any extra writing implements? Maybe at their desk? So the main things that we are looking at in class, this is, first of all, I should say, this is going to be today and tomorrow, very basic introductory stuff. This is basic introductory stuff. And then on the last day, we can get into more advanced things as all of you are interested. So as we're going through things today and tomorrow, if you want to think about if there's a particular area that you would like to go into in more depth, then we can choose to do that on Wednesday. And I can also give you a list of different, more advanced topics in speaking that we can get to on Wednesday. So those of you who just come in, you need something to write on, something to write with. There's extra pens here, and you need the handouts. So the three main things that we're going to have in presenting any kind of a class are what we're going to say, how we're going to say it, our delivery, and then our mood. So the content, we'll say the what, the how, and the mood. The content, the delivery, and the mood. So if you think about a book, so you have what's in the book, the content of the book, then you have the cover of the book, the design, the artwork, and then you have also what is the mood of the book. Isn't it? The mood of both the content and the delivery. So I'd like you to just take a few minutes and make a list of what you like to get out of a class when you're in the audience. So I'm just going to take 5 minutes. Make a list of what, when I'm in the audience of class, when I'm a listener, what do I want to get out of the class? What do you want? And then to let us know if that's in the category of mood, delivery, or content. Okay, we can start with you. Something from your list?
Understanding and getting insights of the shastra.
Would you consider that from the speaker's mood, the speaker's delivery style, or the actual content?
Content.
From the content. Okay. Get it ready? Can you give us one? Anirani, can you give us one?
I had some hard time to, because I came late, so I didn't really...
Did you have anything that you wrote down as to what you would like to get out of a class?
Not yet.
Not yet. Ishak?
Inspiration.
So you also have inspiration. Can you pick something else, because we just had that?
Realization of the person.
Okay, would you consider that from the mood, the content, or the delivery primarily?
Mood.
From the mood. Okay. Can you suggest something?
Entertainment.
Okay. By the way, it's very interesting because a lot of times people do want entertainment, especially on a weeknight. Very seriously. If you're going to be presenting a class on a weeknight, you have to assume that most people are coming to your class tired, mentally, emotionally, and physically tired. And they're not going to want a class that requires them to do a lot of work, which is ironic because here it is a Tuesday evening and we're having a workshop. This is a workshop, or as I like to call it, a fun shop, but it is something that requires some work. But generally people, especially on a weeknight, they want to be somewhat entertained. And if you can give a class has a lot of Krishna conscious content and inspiration, but is also somewhat entertaining, people will be more receptive to it. Would you count that as mood delivery or content?
Delivery.
Okay, any one of the ladies?
Interaction with the audience,
which would you put that under? The mood. Okay, I would also put it under delivery. So a big item in delivery. Do we have any more handouts? A big item in delivery is making sure that there's interaction with the audience. Okay? Rida Chaitanya, something you have? No? Mahamantra Das? I'm definitely going to remember your name.
Humor and
deeper understanding. Okay, well, those are two different things. Which one do you want to pick? Humor. Okay, what would you put that under?
Mood.
Okay. Now, humor is also very much a way of connecting with an audience. Because whenever there's some humor, people relax. They kind of let you in. It forms a rapport with an audience. Yes? Oh, we have to be careful with everything. But can you tell us something that's on everything here? Prabhupada talks about how Krishna consciousness is a razor's edge. And so anything that we're learning here can be misused.
You have to be careful not to make fun of people.
Is that what you have on your list, is what you're looking for? Can you give us something on your list?
Accurate.
You want accuracy. Okay, what would you put that?
If somebody just makes things up.
Okay, so what would you put that under, mood delivery or content?
Content.
Content, okay. One of the gentlemen? Something from your list? Chamananda?
Purified heart from hearing Krishna Lila.
Wow, okay. A purified heart from hearing Krishna. Well, you're not going to get that tonight. Well, tomorrow, when we're starting to practice, we'll do that, but we won't get to that in an hour tonight. Would you put that under mood delivery or content? Content. Okay. Yes?
Something that I can use in my daily practices.
Okay, something you can use in your daily practices, something practical. What would you put that under?
Content.
Okay. Any more of the men here have something they'd like to contribute from their list? Yes?
Practical application.
Practical application, which I think is very, very much the same thing. Any of the ladies? Yes?
Personality.
Personality, what do you mean by that?
I really love classes where people share their individualness within their Krishna conscious journey.
Okay, so where the speaker is sharing something of themselves as an individual, what category would you put that under?
I believe that's under mood.
Mood, okay. All right, so we're going to first look at mood. By the way, tonight we probably have time to go under mood and presentation. So mood and delivery, I don't know if we're going to have, we may start to touch on content tonight. We'll be going to do a lot of work on content tomorrow. And so please make sure you come tomorrow with these same papers, because we'll be using them. Right, this is normally a 2-hour class, we're breaking it up over 2 days. And as I said, on Wednesday, we'll do basic stuff today and tomorrow. Wednesday we'll do advanced stuff. All right, so we want to spend a little time about mood. And mood is really the essence to avoid what you were speaking about, Kanchanavali, and that is misuse. Because what we're trying to do here is to become expert in a service. It's one of the 26 qualities of a devotee, is to become expert. Can we think of some devotee in the Shastra who is really expert at his service in terms of practical expertise? Well, Daksha, but I'm thinking about a pure devotee, and that is that common devotee.
Ambarish.
All right. I like that. He used all the 9 processes of devotion, and he was ruling the kingdom and also a first-class devotee. Anybody else? Yes?
Arjuna.
So I really feel Arjuna exemplifies the dedication to expertise. He would be practicing his archery when?
At night.
He was practicing his archery at night.
In darkness.
Huh?
When it was completely dark.
He was practicing his archery, and he was so expert that when he was tested by his guru, right, he saw the bird in the tree. What do you see? He just saw the eye of the bird. So what we're going to be studying the next few days is to become expert in speaking. But expertise can be misused. Yes? You started talking about how, I know I cut you off because I didn't want to get into all the ways we could misuse everything I'm going to be teaching you. So how humor could be misused, but any of these techniques could be misused. We all know of expert orators who've misled millions of people. Right? Or we can think of, you know, all the actors who are dragging people into materialism, or how, you know, in the commercials and advertisements, a lot of these same techniques are being misused. So therefore, I like to start with mood. Because we're not just trying to become expert, we're trying to become expert to please Radha Gopinath and Gauritai and Jagannath Balaram and Subhadra and Sri Prabhupada and the whole parampara. That's really the purpose of what we're doing. And so before we get into more of the technical expertise, we want to look at what is the mood. So some thoughts on what should be our mood. Yes?
Following the words of Krishna, Krishna says austerity in speech.
Okay, I like that. That's one of my favorite verses in the Shastra. To have austerity of speech. So one should have this mood that my speech should be in sattva guna. It should be truthful. Right? You're saying not making something up. And it should be, the content should be pleasing. Of course, sometimes the content has to not be pleasing in order to help people. The word shouldn't be agitating. The word shouldn't be harsh. It should be based on the Vedas. We should be quoting the scripture. And it should be beneficial. And that's the most important aspect of the mood. And this item of beneficial also applies to this practical application piece. A lot of what people brought up, it should be inspiring, I should be able to apply it, I should be enlivened about Krishna Leela. This has a lot to do with having a mood that whatever I say should benefit people. And this mood is going to translate into how we organize the content. So when we get into, when I look at a verse, how am I going to organize the content? The first thing we're looking at is how is what I'm going to say become helpful to the people. It should help me as a speaker, and it should help people. I'm sure we've all been in classes that we thought, okay, it was Shastric, but it was not of any value to me. There was nothing. Haven't we all been in classes like that? We're just like, what can I take away from this class? And you're just sort of... Yeah. All right, some other thoughts about mood. Yes? A service mood. Very nice. So a mood of service. You know, I'm not, it's the speaker is meant to serve everybody in the audience and to serve Srila Prabhupada, to serve the Lord. We're here as a servant. Yes. Yes.
The best mood for me, I'm inspired for Krishna Das Kaviraj. I think for me it's one of the best mood, which is touching me. Every time I'm listening to Krishna Das Kaviraj.
Can you tell us something about Krishna Das Kaviraj's mood you particularly find helpful?
First of all, he's really humble. Then he's asking to please the devotees first. He is asking not to hurt the devotees, and he is really pleased. And then we feel really that before giving any content, before giving any delivery, what is the most important, it's his mood of presentation, because we feel inside that his mood is real, is speaking truly.
I really like that. And if each of us might find somebody in the Shastra or one of our acharyas whose mood we find particularly inspiring, we can meditate on that mood. One of the participants in the Kirtan seminar was telling me that they were studying the songs of Bhaktivinoda, that Janavi was having people not only sing the songs of Bhaktivinoda, but trying to imbibe his mood. And I think each of us might find certain of our acharyas or certain people in the scriptures whose mood that we particularly as individuals find inspiring. And again, who I might find inspiring might be a little different than someone else. Does that make sense? Yes? And to see what is their mood. And you can see the mood of the acharyas in their writing from what they write as their Mangalacharana verses. How they're dedicating what they're writing. How they're presenting themselves. Hare Krishna. Do we have any more papers? We're out. Maybe tomorrow bring a few more. Okay, maybe somebody could. Do you need a chair, Prabhu?
No, thank you.
Okay. Anything else about mood? Yes?
Maybe light mood and not too happy mood?
Well, it depends on the topic. You know, sometimes there are certain topics that a heavy mood is appropriate in certain audiences. Depends on your audience, depends on your mood, and on the mood that's relevant to that audience and that topic. So there are certain topics in certain audiences where a light mood would be very inappropriate. So I think what we would say rather is part of the mood is gauging, okay, what topic do I have? Presuming you're going to speak on a verse, is the verse dealing with a very heavy topic? And what is the audience? Yes?
I think it's a principle which applies not only to presenting Krishna consciousness through giving classes, but also, let's say, dancing or singing kirtan. And this is that we understand that we cannot do it, actually, Krishna does not really empower us.
Yes.
The spiritual master. Because materially, any material subject you can learn, they can give facts, but spiritual subjects, they should not only be informative, they should touch the heart.
Mm.
So we are not the ones who are touching the hearts of people, it's really something that comes through us.
I personally consider this point to be the most important one. That we're supposed to be a transparent via media. And the most, what I find the most wonderful thing about giving classes and preaching in Krishna consciousness is that when it's done right, you really feel connected with Krishna and with the Parampara. I mean, you actually, it's an experience that you have. That you just feel that Srila Prabhupada, our acharyas, Krishna is using you as an instrument. And it's kind of funny because materially, if we say someone's using you as an instrument, it's kind of a nasty thing, you know, being used. But spiritually, it's one of the most pleasurable things. And this is going to sound very peculiar, but I often find that most dramatically if the circumstances are not right. If I was asked to speak at the last minute and I had no time to prepare, or if I was very sick or very tired, if somehow I was in a situation where I couldn't draw on my normal tools. And I say this sounds a little peculiar because it's not that you want to not draw on your normal tools when you can. It's not that, well, I have a whole day to prepare, but I'm just going to leave it to the last minute and say, Krishna, speak through me. You know, to me, it's like Arjuna saying, well, Krishna, you're going to fight the battle. I'm just your instrument, so why should I practice archery at night? You know, why bother? But there are times when it just happens. You know, you're asked, hey, can you speak in 2 minutes? And there it is, and you know, or you're exhausted. Remember the first time I came to Slovenia and I had flown from America and I had a long, long journey. And I came and I said, you know, I don't want to give any class tonight. And they kind of tricked me. They said, would you like to see the deities? I said, sure, you know, and I come to see the deities. And there's like 50, 60 devotees there. They said, would you sit down and speak? And I'm like, you know, I haven't had any sleep. I just got off the plane. So I found that often in those sort of circumstances, you just go, Krishna, I have no idea what I'm supposed to be saying and what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, will you just give this class? And you find this feeling of just intense and amazing empowerment, where you're really acting as a via media, and it's so much fun. I feel in those circumstances like I'm just the observer, kind of watching Krishna give the class and use me. But even if we spent 2 weeks preparing for a class, which certainly I have sometimes, and for some seminars and presentations I spend months preparing, if preparing an intricate PowerPoint and lots of handouts and something very involved. So even when we put a lot of preparation, it's always that Krishna, you do this through me, Srila Prabhupada, you work through me. You know, you use me as your instrument. And I see that that's something that's important to do at every step of the preparation. It's not just something you do while you're speaking, but to have that, that mood all along. And as we start getting into working on the content and looking for the theme and looking for the principles, I see that mood of Lord, what do you want me to say? Because ultimately, no matter what research I do or how perceptive I am or what kind of rapport I have, I can't really know what everybody needs to hear. You know, that only God can know that. And so it's a question of making oneself open. And I see that as the most important thing. Anything else on mood? Yes?
Respect and prayer, like, please can you pray for my good lecture, the relationship between audience and speaker, that is really respect.
Yes, definitely respect. One thing I'd like to caution, though, and I mentioned it this morning, is if you're getting up and speaking, like Prabhupada said, if you're going to dance, don't wear a veil. You know, so if you're getting up and speaking, you are presenting yourself as having some authority on the topic. And if you're not willing to do that, don't speak. Like I had a godbrother who, whenever he would give Bhagavatam class, wouldn't sit on the Vyasasana. You know, he would always sit on a cushion on the floor. And I said, Prabhu, the Vyasasana isn't for you, it's for Vyasadeva, it's for the Bhagavatam. And if you don't think you're representing Vyasadeva in the Bhagavatam, don't give the class. Take a choice. So it's a little tricky if you're going to ask your audience to pray for you. You know, you do want to have, I mean, this is a point that I, as an American, try to learn from the Indians and from those of Asian cultures, the concept of etiquette. You know, people from Asian cultures, they actually feel very disturbed if someone who's senior acts like their junior. It really bothers them. So there is a certain kind of etiquette that when you are speaking, you are taking a certain role. And that's your service to take that role. So I would be a little cautious. I mean, sometimes if you're speaking in front of people who are very senior to you, and that does happen sometimes, then that would be appropriate. But certainly, you know, we enter into our proper mood through prayer, prayer to Guru, prayer to Prabhupada, prayer to Krishna. And again, I see that as something that very much part of preparation, but also very much ongoing when you're speaking. There's kind of, you want to have this sort of constant dialogue between you and Krishna and you and your audience. Any other thoughts on mood? Yes?
Personalizing and at the same time being an instrument and guru's path.
Personalizing it. And we'll get to that a lot when we look at content. How do we personalize what we're presenting, not just in terms of ourselves, but in terms of the audience? Then a lot of mood is also some reciprocation with the audience. That you're not speaking to a wall, you're speaking to people. And you're not even speaking to a group, you're speaking to individuals. And that comes out in when you're planning your content. And again, that's going to be our main focus of what we're going to learn about planning content. And it also comes out in terms of delivery. By the way, I've been doing something all along in terms of the content of what I've been saying tonight. And it's something I keep doing, and I'm going to ask you all at the end if you can find what it is that I'm doing. And it's something particularly important if you're giving a multi-part presentation. So reciprocation with the audience means that you're thinking about what do they need, how can I serve them, the mood that's coming out in a service mood. And I see it also deals a lot with how you treat your audience. Like you were saying, don't have jokes at your audience's expense. Right? Another way I see that mood comes out is how one deals with difficult questions and comments. Let's use the word difficult. People who use question and comment time inappropriately. And how do you deal with those people? So what is the mood that you have with the audience if somebody says something as a question or comment that really shouldn't have been said? If they ask a question about something that's irrelevant, if they ask a question that's very political, that has some very political motive in it, if people ask a question to shame you, the speaker, or to shame somebody in the audience, if they make a comment as their political podium, you know, how do you deal with that? As I see part of the mood. And I had a very interesting experience many years ago when I was studying neurolinguistic programming. So I had two different teachers. One who I'd say was spiritual but not religious, and one who was religious but not spiritual, for lack of a better way of trying to explain them. So the main one who I'd say was spiritual but not religious. So he was a vegetarian, and he was interested in Krishna consciousness, and he loved prasadam, and he loved the Bhagavad Gita, but he's basically an impersonalist. The other one was someone who worked for Catholic charities, and he dedicated his whole life to Catholicism, but he certainly wasn't a vegetarian, and he certainly wasn't open to other spiritual paths. So I don't know if I should use their names. Anyway, we'll call them A and B. So Mr. A, who was the spiritual but not religious, whenever anybody would ask a question about something he'd already explained, or about something that wasn't relevant to the class, or any, you know, he would put them down. He would make them feel stupid and embarrassed in front of everybody. Many, many years ago in New York, this was 1978, so I was pregnant with my daughter at the time, and our son would have been 3. So the person who was speaking, whose name I will not mention, it was one of the 11. Anyway, the person who was speaking was talking about how we serve Guru birth after birth. So then I raised my hand and I said, I don't really understand how that works. How do you get the same Guru birth after birth? Does the same Jiva have to come back? You know, how exactly does that work? And I was thinking at that time in ISKCON history, I thought these 11 gurus, you know, I don't know, were they all gurus in the past? Or did they just become Krishna conscious now? And some of the people taking birth in our movement were probably initiated in a past life. So how are they getting the same guru birth after birth? These were kind of my practical questions. And that person who shall not be named yelled at me in front of 300 devotees. And said, you just want to come back birth after birth to enjoy sense gratification. You just want to drag your guru. I mean, just screaming at me in front of everybody. And I felt like I wanted the marble floor to open up, and I wanted to, you know, kind of fade into the subway system of New York. So a lot of the mood is, how respectful are you? Especially when there's reasons not to be respectful. You know, and in comparison, this teacher B that I saw, even when people asked ridiculous questions or questions about something he had just explained or irrelevant questions, he would always first honor the person. Always. He would say, you know, that's a really interesting point, but we're not really discussing that now. You know, we discussed that last session, or maybe we can talk about that later. Or sometimes you can use some humor. Sometimes I'll say, you know, that's the right answer, but to the wrong question. And something where people feel that they're being honored. And I would say that that mood is extremely important. I was just in a meeting of some educators in ISKCON, many of whom were second generation, and some of whom had been my students in Gurukula. And we were talking about how important it is to let people ask their difficult questions. So especially if someone asks a question that seems offensive or heretical, and I always use the example of one of my students when she was a teenager. She was at this meeting. She's now herself a teacher of devotee children, second initiated. So when she was, I don't know, 14, we had our Bhakti Shastri classes, And I asked the students to come with difficult questions. And she said, in this purport, Prabhupada's really criticizing Arjuna. How is that not Vaishnava Aparad? So, you know, how will you respond if somebody asks that kind of a question? And that's also part of the mood. You know, you don't want to shut people down. How are you accusing Prabhupada of Vaishnava Aparad? How offensive are you? No, but to take it, oh, somebody's asking a genuine question. And you can say, well, that's a really thoughtful question. I'm so glad you've raised that point. So that's part of the mood of having deep respect for everyone in the audience. And sometimes you have people who are causing a disturbance. I mean, you find that Srila Prabhupada sometimes had to deal with people who were causing a disturbance. It doesn't happen very often, but it does happen. And it's something that you want to meditate. What am I going to do if someone's really causing a disturbance? Then another thing that's very, very important to me personally, I wouldn't say I've taken a vow in front of the deities, but I've made a firm determination about this, is I feel it's very important that we should have a mood of illuminating the verse if we're speaking on a verse in purport. Because sometimes we can pick a theme. Like maybe we're going to a yoga group and we say, okay, I'm going to talk about karma and reincarnation. But many times we're given a verse in purport to speak about. And I understand that it's very important that I'm supposed to be the servant of this verse. It's not that, okay, I'm given the Vyasa Son and a microphone. Great! Now I can talk about what I want to talk about. I read the verse in purport and then launch into my own political, you know, desires. So I personally feel it's important to be a servant of the Shastra and of Srila Prabhupada. What is Prabhupada saying in the purport? What is Sukadeva Goswami saying? What is Narada Muni saying? And that my mood is to take what's in the Shastra and help the audience to understand and apply what's in the Shastra. I think of it as if I had a page of the Shastra and we're shining a light behind it. So this is what I think about in terms of mood. Any other thoughts on mood before we go on? Yes?
Thanks very much, Kim, what you already mentioned about respecting the audience and also speaking something that's beneficial. But I feel that we have the mood or the attitude that's like caring for the audience.
Mm.
Not like it's about me and how well I'm going to present, but it's really about the care that you're really doing.
Very nice.
Then when people even ask questions, you're really caring for what is their concern. And yeah.
Yes, and sometimes you want to make sure that you're answering the question they're really asking, to clarify it for them. It's interesting you said it's not about how well I present, but I want to present well out of caring for the audience. So I understand that my taking the time and the effort to present well is a very practical, tangible demonstration of caring for the audience. You know, I think that way in general, just like this temple here is exemplary in terms of its cleanliness. And I see that as not only as being done for Radha Gopinath and being done for Prabhupada, but as a way of telling everyone who comes to the temple, we care about you and we want you to have a nice experience. You know, having expertly cooked prasadam is in the same kind of category. Having good signage at a temple. You know, all these kinds of things, they come from a mood. Yeah? That we want things to be expert as a demonstration of caring. You know, I was in a temple where the signage was literally from 1982. I know, because my husband and I made the sign in 1982 and put it up. And it had phone numbers on it of people who are now deceased. It had timings for things that aren't going on anymore. It had a map for a temple that's been changed. And this was like right by the front door of the temple. So, you know, when you have this mood of caring for people, it's going to show up in expertise. And so the next thing we're going to talk about, this will be the last thing we'll do tonight, we'll get to content tomorrow, so again, please bring your papers tomorrow, is delivery. So what I just talked about with a temple, that's all equivalent to delivery of a speech. Okay, the temple's not about the cleanliness. It's not about the number of preps of prasadam. It's not about the signage. It's not about the flowers, is it? It's about the spirituality that's going on there. It's really about the kirtan and the classes, correct? But those things are the delivery. How is the temple delivered? You can think of it again like the cover of a book, the size of the font, the white space on the page, the way it's bound, or a package you get in the mail. How well is it wrapped? How clearly is it addressed? So the delivery of the speech, it's not the speech. But if there's poor delivery, we're not going to be so interested in the content, isn't it? Okay, so we're going to go through a few things, and I am going to give you a homework, a home fun assignment. To practice in front of a mirror sometime between now and tomorrow, and then I'm going to ask you all, I shouldn't say this, because then you might not come. But I'm going to ask everybody to give just a 1 minute demonstration tomorrow. Of 30 seconds of a demonstration of bad delivery and 30 seconds of a demonstration of good delivery. If you don't want to, you don't have to. I'm not going to force you. You're not getting a grade or anything. So you know, if you're like, that's okay. Won't be forced. Don't worry about it. But this is a skills class, so if you want to get the most out of it, I would suggest do that. So what are we looking at with delivery? What are the items? Yeah.
Well, for instance, if I'm enthusiastic about something, and then the way how I present it is going to make people think, oh, I trust this person.
I would put that in the category of mood, and I like that you brought that up. It's something I should add to my lesson plan. But our enthusiasm about something is communicative, right? We're not just communicating the content, but our enthusiasm about it. But I want to look at technical delivery skills. That's a good one to add to mood. Yes?
Interaction with the audience is looking at the audience.
Eye contact. Okay, I have been in classes in ISKCON where the speaker is like this the entire time. I have been in classes in ISKCON where the speaker fell asleep also. It's extremely difficult to relate to somebody who has their eyes closed the whole time. You know, you feel like you might as well be listening to a recorded lecture. So, to have eye contact. Now, if you're really, really, really nervous, you can look at the wall behind people, although it's not quite as effective. So if you're extremely nervous, just look behind people. If you just like can't bear to look at people. Now, it's interesting because, should I say this? I don't know. So I was professionally trained as a speaker, but when I joined ISKCON, I wasn't allowed to speak. I have the wrong chromosomes. So, you know, that was... When my GBC, zonal secretary, town president, and my husband all pushed me. At first I said, okay, just Sunday feasts, no morning classes, and then it took about a year before I agreed to give morning classes. And then when I wouldn't look at the men's side, I'd only look at the ladies' side. And it was quite a few years before one of my Gurukul students... One of my teenage male Gurukul students says, you know, Mother Amila, we feel like we're all invisible. And I'm like, okay, I'll look at the men. So we do want to look at people in the audience. Now, if it's a very, very big audience, if it's, you know, hundreds of people, then you want to pick people at certain key points and look at them. Now, I'm sure you're noticing that I'm also looking at these two gentlemen back here. What I really don't like is when people are sitting right behind me. Because I'm so trained to have eye contact that every once in a while I'll look back at them. You know, but that's kind of disconcerting when you have people behind you. But I don't want to be staring at people. But at the same time, if you don't look at people, they feel like they're not there. I know it's been sometimes disconcerting for me. And I understand that a sannyasi might not want to look at the lady's side, but... If the entire class goes by and a male preacher never looks over at the woman's side, after a while I start feeling that I don't exist. I just start thinking, I guess I'm not here. You know, I guess there's nothing in here for me. So eye contact is quite important. Okay, something else about delivery. Yes?
Words you repeat too often, like arm and...
Okay. So the filler words. For that, it's a good idea to make a recording of yourself or to ask somebody, is there a word I repeat a lot? We all have words we repeat, even if it's not and like. You know, I remember one devotee telling me that I say actually all the time. So we tend to have certain words. What's much more effective than these filler words is to pause. And in fact, pausing can be very effective in terms of communication. And it was funny at Gopinath's wedding. So his father, Braj Bihari, read something from Ratatvaja Swami at the reception. And Ratatvaja Swami had written the word pause. So when Braj Bihari was reading it, he said, okay, now I'm told I'm supposed to pause. So there's certainly certain times when you want to pause, that you want people to really think about what you're saying. Okay, something else in delivery. Yes? To speak clearly. And that's particularly an issue if you're speaking to people who may not speak your same language as their native language. So there's always a switch I have to make when I go from America overseas, that I have to speak more clearly. I have to say things like water instead of water. You know, so yes, to speak clearly. And depending on your audience, you may need to speak particularly slowly. So again, if you're speaking to people who don't share as their native language the language in which you're speaking. Okay, some other things about delivery. Yes?
Sure that the audience understands what is like is in the lecture, the way it is.
Now, how do you do that? I know the answer, but I'm wondering if any of you know the answer. How do you make sure that your audience is awake? Now, sometimes I actually see someone falling asleep, and I'll get up the cartels, or I mean, sometimes I'll just go if somebody's sleeping. Now, why do I mean, it's funny. Sometimes you hear Prabhupada's lectures. I think what I was listening to this morning. And Prabhupada said, don't sleep. Stand up. Sometimes he'll say, go to your room. Sleep in your room. Yeah.
When you use your tone, like you, for example, you speak louder, quieter, you engage with the tone, so the people are more interested in listening rather than just quiet and slow.
Okay, so that's another aspect of delivery, is that you're going to change your tone. The key phrase that I say is have the tone of voice match the meaning of the words. So the tone that you're using matching the meaning of the words. But going back to what you said, it's a question of noticing body language. Really, and kind of trying to read your audience. One time in ISKCON Soho, I was supposed to give a class on Madhvacharya's appearance or disappearance day, I can't remember which. And I spent about a week preparing, really studying Madhvacharya's philosophy. Well, 10 minutes into the class, I could tell that I had lost pretty much everybody by looking at their body language. They were just kind of like... And I just threw out the class. I said, okay, let's talk about something different. So to be able to read people's body language and then to adjust... If you're talking about something and you can see that people have this lost expression on their face, you know, what they call deer in the headlights, then you can understand people may be shy to say, I don't have any idea what you're talking about, or I can't relate to this. And then have some flexibility. You might want to go back and think, wait a minute, maybe I'm going too high for this audience. Maybe I have to go back and explain something foundational. Or maybe I didn't plan right, and this isn't something that people can relate to. So to watch people's body language and see if they're uncomfortable. This is also true, I mean, here you have your little sign and your little clock. But in many places, there isn't a set end time, especially if it's a program at people's home. Or in some places, devotees don't go to a temple every day. People live very far away. They come together just on a weekend. I had this recently happen to me where I was giving a class Sunday morning, but it was in a devotee's home. And the people who were there lived very far from a temple. They didn't go to a temple very often. And so I could see that even after 45 minutes, people were very engaged. Nobody was looking at their watch. Nobody was falling asleep. Nobody was getting out their phone. Nobody was looking around the room. People were really, really engaged. So I went on for another 15 minutes. People were still really engaged. And people were very much there. And then I said, you know, should we stop for breakfast? And they're like, no. You know, but on the other hand, as soon as you start getting those signals, if it's not a class that ends at a set time, as soon as people start doing the fidgeting, then you're gauging, okay, that I should end here. Some other thoughts about delivery? Yes?
To not have philosophy the whole time, but sometimes tell stories.
I would put that in content, so if you can save that for tomorrow. Yes?
If you use scriptures, make sure that that will order.
Make sure your papers are in order. Well, that ties into, you know, what I should have done for tonight was make sure there was a flip chart. But that ties into having your stuff together. You know, and doing the best that you can to make sure that whoever's arranging the room has their stuff together. So if you're doing something that needs a projector, that you know, I always triple check. I feel a little OCD about it, but I just learned that if I just say, well, I have a screen and projector, and they say yes, that doesn't necessarily mean that the person who said yes is the person who's going to make sure there's a screen and projector. So, you know, check on that, or if you need a flip chart, or if we need handouts, or whatever you need, that you have that prepared, you have that in advance, and if you need a lot of stuff, you want to come a little early and make sure that that's all set up. Another thing is gestures. So, a lot of our communication is in our body language. And I'd like you that between now and our class tomorrow to pay attention to people's body language and gestures just when you're speaking with them one-on-one or in a small group. Just pay attention for the next 23 hours. Not when you're sleeping, I suppose. But, you know, what are people's gestures? Now, you'll notice if we're talking one-on-one, our gestures generally tend to be closer to our body. So when you're speaking to a group, you want the same gestures, but you want to make them a little bigger. And the bigger the room and the more people, the bigger they have to be or you won't be seen. And if you're just speaking like this, it's very odd. Or just like this. Or, you know, so there, you want some kind of movement. But it shouldn't be just, our U.S. president has like one gesture. What an embarrassing man. But, you know, you want a variety of gestures. Also, this is advanced, so probably I shouldn't talk about it until Thursday. So just remind me on Thursday to talk about advanced gestures. Okay? Just make a note. Somebody make a note about advanced gestures. I'm not going to talk about that tonight. Yes?
Can I ask about gestures? Like if you have a tendency to sometimes use them too much,
can you overuse them? Yes, anything can be over. You can overuse humor, you could overuse gestures, you could overuse, you know, drama, you can overuse verses, you could overuse quoting so that your whole class is just one long Sanskrit rendition. We have articles submitted to BTG like that. I'm one of the BTG editors. We have some articles that are just verses. There's, you know, a two-sentence introduction and then just this list of slokas and then a two-sentence conclusion. So anything, yes, can be overdone. The last thing is posture. So posture also communicates, you were talking about enthusiasm, confidence. So, you know, if you typically have bad posture, it might be something you want to work on for your health. But you do want to be aware of your posture. Okay, that's all we have time for today. So your home fun is please spend at least 5 minutes between now and 6 o'clock tomorrow. Practice delivering. You can even be reading. You can even just take something and read it. And look in the mirror. Look at your eye contact. Look at your gestures. Look at your posture. You can even record yourself. Pay attention to your tone of voice. See if you have any filler words. And pay attention to the gestures of the people that you're coming in contact with during the day. You know, switch your attention sometimes from the content of what people are saying to what are they doing with their gestures and their eyes and their posture. Just pay attention to that on a conversational note. All right, and tomorrow we're going to be focusing primarily on content. So we have this paper that has two verses on it. We're going to be using that for practice. So it would also be a good idea if you read this over before the class tomorrow, because we're going to be planning a class based on this content. All right? And then Thursday is going to be all for advanced topics. Anybody notice what I kept doing throughout this hour? Yes? Yes. Alluding to the future. Whenever you are going to give a presentation that goes over more than one session, if you want people to come back, sprinkle your presentation with what you're going to be covering in the future. And this can also be true in one class if you want people to stay till the end of the class. That you can put something in there about what you're going to talk about later. By the way, that's all over the Bhagavatam. Sukadeva Goswami is always putting in these little things that then Maharaj Parikshit said, whoa, you said that! Can I hear more about that? Right? You tell. The Cowherd Boys didn't talk about that for a year? What? Why would they have talked about that for a year? Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question. So he's putting in all these little hints to bring you forward. Okay? I hope this was helpful.